You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
Step by step along this march, can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions and is sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Teamsters Joint Council 56 and Elevator Constructors Local 12. Teamsters Joint Council 56 and our nine local unions represent 30,000 workers, retirees, and their families in western Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska. We're proud to support the Heartland Labor Forum and their commitment to give working families a voice in the greater Kansas City community. Elevator Constructors Local 12 installs, repairs, modernizes, and maintains elevators and escalators in the western half of Missouri and the entire state of Kansas. The safety of the riding public is always our priority. We thank our underwriters for their support, the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. On tonight's show, Joe Hill's Last Will with John McCutcheon. It's 100 years since IWW organizer and songwriter Joe Hill was executed by the state of Utah. Hear his story and his music on tonight's show. In the news, Governor Nixon vetoes bill that would impoverish already poor children, and CWA to protest AT&T bargaining takebacks.
This morning at a press conference in Kansas City at Operation Breakthrough, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon announced he was vetoing Senate Bill 24. The bill, which passed the House and Senate by wide margins, would reduce the lifetime limit for benefits under the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program from 5 years to 3 years and 9 months starting next January. The bill also would drop people and their families from the program for failing to meet work requirements.
For thousands of Missouri children, going without can mean not having access to the simple but critical things, like books, preschool, healthy food, safe places to play and exercise, things that help children thrive and grow in mind and body. It can mean being unable to imagine a future outside of poverty. As Missourians and as Americans, we want every child to grow up healthy and strong. And that's why this morning I vetoed Senate Bill 24. Senate Bill 24 is a misguided measure that punishes poor children in the legislature's zeal to reduce reliance on government assistance. Supporters of this act called it the Strengthening Missouri Families Act. Let me be very clear. We do not strengthen families by hurting children.
Amen. Nixon said an estimated 6,400 poor children would lose benefits, including 2,600 under the age of five, and that number would double every year for 10 years. He said there are ways that the legislature could ensure that parents are held accountable for their decisions while at the same time protecting kids. For example, by providing benefits through a responsible guardian. But again, legislators left children unprotected. They say they're trying to crack down on adults, but they've made kids the collateral damage. Nixon pointed out that the legislature was addressing a problem that didn't exist because the number of Missourians on TANF declined by 13% last year with the help of a growing economy.
Fast track or trade promotion authority to guarantee passage without amendment of the blockbuster Trans-Pacific Partnership has a new high dollar backer, the Business Roundtable, which leads the New Trade Benefits America Coalition. They've made significant six-figure Cablevision ad by promoting the passage of the Trade Priorities and Accountability Act of 2015. The spot, titled One Thing, will begin airing on national cable and in targeted media markets across the country this week. It starts, "One thing above everything else makes the American economy the best in the world, the American worker. It appeals to people to give the American worker new markets by telling Congress to pass trade promotion authority. The key to open markets and stronger rules for American businesses in today's global economy." Of course, the spokesman for American workers, Rich Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, couldn't disagree more. He said this week, "The TPP is the latest example of a long-term approach to trade that was designed to drive wages down, create special rights for corporations, and export jobs." He added that the vote on the TPP and Fast Track will be key to winning labor support in next year's election. He said, "The labor movement opposes Fast Track, and we expect those who seek to lead our nation forward to oppose Fast Track as well. There's no middle ground." New York Mayor Bill de Blasio also disagrees with the Business Roundtable. He came out against the trade deal this week as a raw deal and a huge mistake. On the heels of that, the New York City Council voted unanimously to pass a resolution declaring the city a TPP-free zone, urging Congress to reject fast-track legislation for the trade deal. Finally, yesterday, Representative Peter DeFazio of Oregon spoke out against the provision buried in the fast-track bill, which he called the Monsanto provision in Section 2, on objectives for U.S. negotiator, which binds them to fight for rules in trade agreements that eliminate the so-called barriers to markets, such as labeling of genetically engineered foods.
Over 17,000 Communications Workers of America, CWA, at AT&T are working without a contract. AT&T wants workers to pay 260% more in health care, eliminate pensions, eliminate job security clauses, and it refuses to bargain benefits for over 250,000 retirees that built their empire. This, despite CEO Randall Stephenson's report last week at the annual shareholders meeting that the company had one of the best first quarters ever, netting $32.6 billion after closing out 2014 with $131.6 billion in net revenue. The union says it's the fight of our life to get a fair contract at AT&T. They're asking members and allies to join them for an informational picket tomorrow, Friday, May 1st, at 777 Northwest Blue Parkway, Lee Summit. Park in Summit Fair Shopping Center. The picket will take place between 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. Bring noisemakers. That's the news from our side. The news tonight was read by Greg Swartz, Molly Madden, and I'm Judy Ansel.
Hi, I'm Tino Scalise.
2015 marks the 100-year anniversary of Joe Hill's execution by the state of Utah. John McCutcheon is a singer and songwriter, and he's recently released an album in support of the anniversary. John, can you tell us who Joe Hill was, and why is he important to workers today?
Joe Hill was a Swedish immigrant to the U.S. He came into America in the first decade of the 1900s. He was an itinerant worker, a laborer. He did all kinds of work. He felled trees, and he harvested wheat, and he loaded cargo. Eventually ended up out west, which is where he joined the Industrial Workers of the World, which is an early radical trade union, which had the notion that they were an industrial union as opposed to a trade union or a craft union. They believed that all workers should belong to one big union. Mm-hmm. Every strike would thus be a general strike and would last about 15 minutes. So they had opposition on all sides, from the AFL, of course. They were They were trade unions and craft unions, and the bosses as well. Joe was, believe it or not, a songwriter for the IWW. It's impossible in 2015 to imagine a union having a songwriter, especially one that was considered essential to their organizing.
This is what I wanted to talk to you about, John, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I wanted to – my next question was going to be, you know, he was an organizer with the IWW, but I wanted to know, I wanted to get a sense from you, if you know, did he make his living chiefly as an itinerant worker or as a singer-songwriter or as an organizer for the IWW? Can you just tell us about sort of his career once he met up with the IWW?
Well, it was all those things.
Okay.
Once it became clear that he was able to write songs that assisted in the organizing efforts of the IWW, he became an organizer who was a songwriter. The IWW was the heyday of the singing union. At no other point in American trade union history was there a singing movement, and They believed in this for a couple of reasons. Number one, a lot of the people were illiterate, so songs were a way to get information to people. You know, they learned that from churches who started doing that back in the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a way to inspire people and to have people feel like they were connected to one another, because Joe's songs and most of the songs that were written for the IWW, and Joe Hill was not the only songwriter. He was simply the most well-known songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
There was John Britt, and there was Haywire Matt McClintock and Ralph Chaplin. Joe's particularly effective because he wrote songs that were designed to be sung. He was the ultimate utilitarian songwriter. He was, by his own words, not writing songs for the ages. He was writing songs that were designed to do a job, and then, like any worker, you know, pull their shift and go home. And in 2015, when the average American's connection with the music industry is via American Idol, which is about self-aggrandizement and fortune and competition, to have someone like Joe Hill be thrust out, hopefully, on the national and international stage is not only important, but I think it gives all of us pause to think about what it means as an artist when your primary job is to be useful.
Sure. And to that end, I wanted to know, you mentioned that he was known and sent out as an organizer and singer-songwriter for the Industrial Workers of the World. Was he known outside of the Industrial Workers of the World or outside of the labor community? Did he perform in public? Or
No. His entire purpose was to serve the mission of the IWW. Mm-hmm. Was he known outside the IWW? Absolutely. It's why he was arrested and executed. Because he was really effective.
I see. And that might be a good lead into what we're talking about next. Why was he targeted? Why was he targeted by the state of Utah?
You know, we could get into a long and probably pointless discussion about whether he committed the crime that he was convicted of. He was working in a copper mine outside of Salt Lake City. When a grocer and his son were killed in Salt Lake City. About the same time that they were killed, Joe Hill showed up at a doctor's office with a bullet hole. It was a clean shot through. There was no bullet in his body. He claimed that he was shot in an argument over a woman. He was arrested, and despite fairly scant evidence and certainly no bullet that showed that he had been shot in the murder, mm-hmm. he was convicted. The Utah State Supreme Court upheld the conviction, and he was executed on November 19th, 1915. Why was he targeted? He was targeted because what he did was important and it was effective. He was well known to the authorities in Utah. And you have to put this in the backdrop, against the backdrop of all the other stuff that was going on. There was a huge anti-immigrant purge going on around the country. This was a time when the IWW was particularly strong. They had thousands of mostly men in their locals. And there are some people who think that Joe accepted his fate for the purposes of being a martyr. We don't really know. But why was he targeted? He was targeted because he was an immigrant, because he was a member of the IWW, and because he did his job well enough that the authorities took notice of it and decided that this guy just can't be around.
Right. So, I mean, just basically being an immigrant and carrying the little red card from the IWW was enough to warrant the attention of the state authorities. So, but how long from the date of the murder that he was charged with until his execution? Do you know? Was it a matter of just...
over a year?
Okay.
I know the trial was in 1914, and he was executed in late 1915. Mid November of 1915, and he wrote extensively while he was in prison. He wrote "The Rebel Girl" while he was in prison. He wrote "It's a Long Way Down to the Soup Line" and many other songs. And of course, he wrote his Joe Hill's last will, the final thing that he wrote.
And that was, it's the title of your album. It's the title of one of your, did you write this song, the Joe Hill's Last Will, or was that somebody else?
I wrote the music for it. He wrote it the night before, before he was executed. You know, legend has it that he handed it through the bars about 10 p.m. to his guard. And he never did put a melody to it. And I thought that 100 years after its composition that, I always loved the thing. I had frequently recited it. Many people had recited it. And I think Ethel Rame of the Penny Whistlers put a melody to it a number of years ago. I've heard that, but I have not heard it. But I was sitting around in my music studio one day just messing around and came up with a melody. That's the only thing on the album that is not written by Joe Hill. Though almost all of his melodies, in fact, the only melody on the recording of the 14 songs that are there that Joe Hill actually wrote was the Rebel Girl. What he was really skilled at doing, and this is important, was taking popular songs of the day, vaudeville songs, Tin Pan Alley songs, even hymns, melodies that people were familiar with, and writing new words, as Utah Phillips used to say, only words that made sense. And this was a template that was later picked up by people like Woody Guthrie. Certainly early Bob Dylan did that. The music of the Civil Rights Movement was entirely based on this notion of taking older songs, especially hymns, and writing new words to them. So that was really his forte. And considering, you know, as a songwriter, the thing that always fascinated me about Joe Hill is English was his second language.
Right.
And yet he had an amazing facility with his second tongue. It was really quite inspiring.
Can we talk about just a few of the different songs that are on the album? First off, I wanted to say that I thought it was really cool that you got to take the lyrics of or the words from Joe Hill's Last Will, and you got to sit down and co-author, but at least sort of collaborate with Joe Hill on a new sort of incarnation of that song. That was pretty great.
Well, it's such a wonderful piece of poetry that I thought it. You know, people might enjoy singing it, and I certainly do.
Okay, and I wanted to actually introduce this next song. It's Joe Hill's Last Will.
Mm-hmm.
For there is nothing to divide. My kin don't need to fuss and moan. Moss does not cling to a rolling stone. My body, if I could choose, I would to ashes it reduce. Then let the merry breezes blow my dust to where some flower grows. Perhaps some fading flower then would spring to life and bloom again. This is my last and final will. Good luck to all of you.
This is the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Tino Scalisi.
Another song that I'd like to talk to you about is Rebel Girl. You said that was written while he was in prison. Can you tell us who is the Rebel Girl? Who's this about?
Well, he wrote the song to help female recruitment into the IWW. Most of the songs that are in the Little Red Songbook are surprisingly male-oriented. I mean, you had some, many of the heavy industry and labor-type crafts that were almost entirely male. You know, you had lumberjacks, you had railroad workers, and you had dock workers and miners. And at 100 years ago, those were exclusively male bastions. But you had, you know, the notion of the dream of the IWW was to have every kind of worker. I mean, one of the songs on the album is What We Want, and it lists the chambermaids and the kitchen girls and, you know, the tanner and the skinner and all the different trades. So he wrote Rebel Girl in an effort to expand the notion of who should be in the IWW. But the Rebel Girl was really Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. And this was written, like almost every song in the Little Red Songbook, as a rally song. It's, you know, every time I've ever heard the Rebel Girl, it's been a foot stomping, hand clapping, you know, let's go get 'em,
right,
kind of song. One of the things I've been doing in addition to this album is I'm doing a one man play written by my dear friend Sai Khan, called Joe Hill's Last Will, about the last night of Joe Hill's life. And when I was preparing for the play, I thought about the Rebel Girl, and Elizabeth Gurley Flynn actually came and visited him in prison. And he, in his correspondence, he wrote to her and said, I wrote this for you. So one of the sort of, you know, conceits that we put in the play was that we believe he was in love with Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. So the treatment that I give to this song is really different than I've ever heard the song performed before. And I really performed it like a love song. And it doesn't even have to be to a particular woman or to one woman, but to an entire gender and class of women who who are out there on the front lines and fighting for workers' rights because they're workers too. So I really love this song and the way that my friend John Jennings and I did it in the studio. This is probably the only song on the album for which Joe Hill wrote both the music and the lyrics. And I should really say that I'm using Hazel Dickens' rewrite of these lyrics. I want to give her credit for a beautiful rewrite of this.
So this is Rebel Girl by Joe Hill and music by John McCutcheon.
Princesses who have charms made of diamonds and pearls, but the only and thoroughbred lady is the rebel girl. She's the rebel girl, the rebel working class. She is a shining pearl. From Maine to Georgia, you'll see her fighting for you and for me. She's right there by your side with her courage and pride. She's unequal in this world, and I'm proud to fight for freedom with the rebel girl. Oh, her hands may be hardened by labor, and her dress may not be so fine, but a heart in her bosom is beating that is true to her class and her kind. And the bosses in terror are trembling as her spite and defiance chill her. Thoroughbred lady is the rebel girl. She's the rebel girl, rebel girl to the working class. She's a shining pearl. From Maine to Georgia, you'll see fighting for you and for me. She's right there by your side with her courage and pride. She's unequal in this world. I'm proud to fight for freedom with rebel girls.
It was a true honor to be here tonight. And thank you to the White House Correspondents Association, whatever that is. But I have to finish up because the exterminators need to get into this room.
A look at the White House Correspondents Dinner in words and music on the Thursday night special, tonight, 7 p.m.
Greetings, this is your friend Pop Freeling, host of the Groove Juice special Sunday mornings from 8 to 9, bringing you totally inspirational, wholly motivational, kind of confrontational, cross-generational celebrations each week with songs, guests, happenings, and all types of audio entertainment for kids and anyone else out there who doesn't care to grow up. Live every Sunday at 8 in the morning at 90.1 KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
If your unemployment benefits have been denied in the last 30 days, you may be eligible for free legal assistance from attorneys and law students through the UMKC School of Law Unemployment Benefits Clinic. To find out if you are eligible for these free legal services, your unemployment benefits must have been denied in the last 30 days. Contact the clinic today and talk to an attorney about your case free of charge. Call 816-235-5129. Again, call 816-235-5129.
And this is the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Tino Scalise.
And we are on the phone with John McCutcheon. John McCutcheon is a singer-songwriter who has just released an album in celebration of the 100-year anniversary of Joe Hill's death. 2015 marks the 100th anniversary of his execution by the state of Utah, and we are talking to John now. John, there's another song that I wanted to talk to you about. It's the Wooden Shoe, the song about the wooden shoe, and I'm so sorry that I don't have the title right in front of me, but I was just listening to it in the car on my way here, right back from the Ford factory, so it made me think of it, and I wanted to ask you about it. Can you tell me about it?
The Wooden Shoe is actually two things put together. It's a spoken word thing, a little poem that Joe wrote about the wooden shoe. Now, most people, when they hear that, would have very little idea of what this is about, but any wobbly, which is what the members of the IWW call themselves, though nobody's really sure where that came from or why they call themselves that, but you ask any wobbly, they'll know exactly what it's about. And workers in Europe were usually so poor that they didn't have enough money for shoes, so they carved their shoes out of wood. The most obvious, evidence of that is the wooden shoe that you see in, characteristically in Holland, in traditional Netherlands culture. Now, because the wooden shoes had no laces or anything, every now and again, it wouldn't have been unusual for a shoe to slip off a worker's foot, and it might, under circumstances, accidentally, of course, fall into a piece of machinery and clog up the machinery. Now, the French word for wooden shoe is sabot, S-A-B-O-T, which is the root of the word sabotage. So sabotage was one of the tactics that the IWW used in their efforts to bring down the machinery of production. And before I did a little research into this spoken word thing, I had no idea what the flag with the wooden shoe on it was about. And this, of course, dovetails into the song Tarara Boom Die, which is exactly about this phenomenon.
So they weren't actually flying a flag with a wooden shoe on it, so we are going to play the song.
When freedom's road is rough and hard and full of rocks and thorns, put your wooden shoes on, pard, and it won't hurt your corns. To organize and teach, no doubt, is very good, it's true. But still, you can't succeed without the good old wooden shoe. I had a job once, threshing wheat, worked 16 hours with hands and feet,
And when the moon was shining bright, they kept me working all the night. One moonlit night, I hate to tell, I accidentally slipped and fell. My pitchfork went right in between the cogwheels of that thresh machine. Ta-ra-ra, boom, da! It made a noise that way, and wheels and bolts and hay went flying every way. That stingy rook said, well, 1,000 shots, hell. I did sleep well that night, I needed it all right. And then that farmer said, you jerk, I'll bet you are, and I won't work. He paid me off right then, by gum. So I went home and told my chum. Next day when threshing did commence, my chum was Johnny on the fence. And upon my word, that awkward kid, he dropped his pitchfork like I did. Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee-ay, it made a noise that way, and part of that machine hit Reuben on the beam. He cried, oh me, oh my, I nearly lost an eye. My partner said, that's right, it's bedtime now, good night. Wise, these things did open up his eyes. He said, there must be something wrong. I think I work my men too long. He cut the hours and raised the pay, gave ham and eggs for every day. Now gets his men from union halls, has no accidents at all. Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee-ay, that Rube is feeling gay. He learned his lesson quick through just a simple trick for fixing rotten jobs and curing greedy slobs. This is the only way. Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee-ay. This is the only way. Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee-ay.
And we are talking with John McCutcheon, singer-songwriter, who just recently released a CD in celebration of the 100-year anniversary of Joe Hill's execution by the state of Utah. John, I wanted to ask you, why? We know that it's the 100-year anniversary, but why do this CD? Why is it relevant today?
Well, for one thing, Joe Hill is a really important figure in American history, and I never learned about him at school. I learned about Joe Hill from folk songs and from hearing people talk about him as they were performing his songs. But he wrote about things in ways that tell us that the last 100 years still presents us with some of the very same things that Joe Hill was struggling with at that time. Let's not be entirely pessimistic here, because in Joe Hill's day, there were no child labor laws. There were no health and safety laws. There was no right to organize, even though that's been deteriorating regularly in this country. There was no concept of a weekend. Many of the industries paid people in scrip. That was only redeemable in that industry's facilities and stores, and people lived in company housing. So the labor movement has made enormous strides, but look at some of the stuff that Joe Hill was writing about. He's writing about income inequity and the deterioration of workers' rights. We're still struggling. There's another anti-immigrant purge going on right now. So, and a song like Mr. Block is a picture of the American workforce now. People want to be like the boss. They don't look to their fellow workers in ways that create solidarity and strength and power, which is the heart of equality and balance in this workplace these days. So number one, I thought that it's It's hard to think of this as a celebration of the 100th anniversary of his execution, because it was a terrible thing that never should have happened. But what I wanted to do was honor his life and honor his work and the ideas that he was espousing, bring them forward. Let's continue chewing on these things, because so many of the things that he wrote about, that he cared about, and that the IWW worked for are still in play today. And it's been amazing to me how many young people come up to me and say, wow, 100 years later, and we still haven't figured this stuff out. So it's, you know, I certainly didn't do this album because I thought it was going to sell a million copies. I knew it would, but that's not the point. That's not why I do albums. I wanted people to know about Joe Hill. I wanted them to know about his music, and I wanted him to serve as a guide for not only how we can start talking about these things, but also how musicians are important organizers. And Joe Hill was all about art getting its hands dirty, and more of that needs to happen today.
Was there anybody that sort of served as a model for him? I mean, Joe Hill was sort of the model for generations of singer-songwriters, organizers from Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, John McCutcheon, and I think that also examples that are contemporary with you, like Tom Morello.
Utah Phillips.
Utah Phillips. I saw Utah Phillips a few years ago, and an amazing, amazing performer, beautiful singer-songwriter, and a very funny fellow, by the way. Did he have anyone that he looked to when he was doing this, or was he sort of the beginning of it all?
I don't know that he was the beginning of it, because there were other writers in the IWW. I mean, you had people like John Brill, who wrote, Dump the Bosses Off Your Back, which was written to the tune of What a Friend We Have in Jesus. You had Ralph Chaplin, who wrote just before Hill's death, Solidarity Forever, which turned 100 years old this year, based on the Battle Hymn of the Republic and John Brown's body before that. So I think more than anything else, he had a community of other writers within the IWW, and they were really encouraging and teaching one another.
And do you know if, was he involved in any sort of labor struggles while he was still with the IWW, stuff that he was directly involved in either as an organizer or as a worker? Do you know?
Absolutely. He was,
For example,
one
this
of the songs
mine thing.
And the album that we can point to is Where the Fraser River Flows.
Oh, okay.
That was written in 1912. During a strike in the Canadian National Railroad up in British Columbia. And that was a huge local. There were over 8,000 members in that one local that were out on strike against the Canadian National Railroad. And he wrote that song specifically for and at that strike. He subsequently wrote Overalls and Snuff and the accompanying second verse to that song, which was actually a separate song about, Martin Welch is mad as hell and he don't know what to do. And the first part of that, Overalls and Snuff, was a song for workers to sing together to give one another courage, because when you're, when you're facing down the cops, when you're, you need to have solidarity. It's one of the hallmarks of his songs and why he wrote. And the second verse was one that they would sing to the bosses, because the bosses would try to get scabs to come in, as all bosses do in strike situations, to take up the work of the striking railroad workers. So a lot of the songs, and many of the songs It's a Long Way Down to the Soup Line, he wrote when he was in prison as a request from an IWW local in San Francisco. And there were many variations on his songs that were rewritten to fit specific strikes. But yes, typically what would happen is headquarters, which is in Chicago, would send Joe Hill to a particular strike. He would hang around for weeks at a time and try to get the words of the workers themselves into the songs. And I can tell you, as a songwriter who has done that with not only struggles, but with just, you know, celebrating people's work, when they hear their work and their struggle sanctified in a song and sung back to them, there's a kind of pride and ownership of not only that song, but of the struggle itself that occurs, that is really unbeatable. So yes, his job was to be an organizer as a songwriter in these strikes.
And there's something that I have to say, you know, as an assembly line worker, I've been working at the Ford factory in Kansas City now for the past 15 years. And, you know, when I first started hearing songs, I guess my introduction to it would have been, you know, Woody Guthrie. And I heard him speak of, you know, guys working on the line and the strikes and the pickets. And then I also got to hear Boots Riley from The Coup. It's sort of a rap music group out of Oakland, California, that speaks about workers and Tom Morello and you, and it does make you feel like, because very often it is isolating work, it is emotionally difficult work, it's monotonous, and hearing these songs, you know, sometimes I'll just put in my iPod and I've listened to your work, I've listened to Tom Morello, I've listened to these guys, and it just does something to you. I mean, whether it soothes you in one regard, and then in another regard it makes you angry, which is sometimes very helpful. So thank you.
Well, it's also, as you say, it can be very isolating, especially when you're on strike, and to find that you're not alone, that you have support across other industries and across other, you know, genres of work, to come in, you know, when I do this kind of work, which I learned how to do from people like Joe Hill. I mean, he's really the grandfather of this. One of the things that you want to do is you want to let people know that they're not alone, and that the labor movement is part of a big social movement, and labor forgets that sometimes, and that there's solidarity across industries, across classes, and music does that in ways that's powerful and could and should be used much more widely than it is.
Just out of curiosity, and this will take about, I hope it doesn't take too long, but I wanted to ask you, have you been to any of the fast food strikes? Is that going to be one of your next songs in your next album?
I haven't been to any of them. There are people who have written, there's a woman in Cleveland named Deborah Van Cleef, who wrote a great song about the McDonald's efforts to raise wages to $15 an hour. And there's lots of people. You know, you hear every now and again, where are all these great songs that are, you know, to support these struggles? And they're definitely out there.
Yeah.
They're being written all the time. And they don't get played on the radio because sometimes they only exist on the factory floor.
Sure.
They only exist on the picket line or on the you know, at the rallies. But there's lots of great musicians, known and unknown to your listeners, who are doing this kind of work. And some of these people are like you. They're assembly line workers, and they're fast food workers, and they're nurses, and they're teachers, and they're miners, and they're writing great songs, and no one knows about someone's work better than the workers themselves.
So if some of our listeners wanted to hear some of your work, where could they go? Online, or are you got shows coming up?
Well, come to the shows. There, my website's easy to remember. It's folkmusic.com. But there's, you know, the internet being the Wild West that it is, there's, you know, there's stuff out there on YouTube, and you know, you just never know when someone takes their phone out and you're singing on a picket line, or at a rally or even in your concerts when you're talking about things that are going on right, in different parts of the world, what stuff ends up being out there. So YouTube is a great resource for that.
And also, you mentioned this play that you were doing, this one-act play. Are you going to be bringing that to Kansas City anytime soon?
I would love to bring it to Kansas City. And I'm doing a big tour of it in June, mostly out in California. But it's bringing some interesting coalitions together, which is what it takes. It takes theaters getting together with a mine workers union local, or an IWW local, or a church group to bring an event together that is unusual and expands the audience and lets people know about this fellow Joe Hill. A lot of the play is in his own words. There's lots of his songs, and he talks about, you know, being on the Fraser River and why the IWW did what they did and do, and why he did what he did. And that's telling and informative, and because I hear it every night, I still never cease to be inspired by it.
John, I want to thank you so much again for your time. You've been incredibly gracious, spending an hour with us here at the Heartland Labor Forum and our audience here in Kansas City, and I hope that we get to see you soon at a concert in Kansas City soon. Yes? No?
Hope so. I don't know. You know, I just get driven up in front of some place, and my road manager says, get out and sing.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, John. I appreciate you.
You're welcome, Tino.
Have a good night.
Please give me your attention, and I'll introduce to you a man that is a credit to our old red, white, and blue. His head is made of lumber and solid as a rock. He is a common worker and his name is Mr. Block. And Block thinks that he may be president one day. Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake, you make me ache. Tie a rock round your block and please jump in a lake. Kindly do it for liberty's sake. Yes, Mr. Block is lucky, he found a job by G. The shark took $7 for job and fare and fee. They shipped him to a desert, dumped him with his truck. When he tried to find his job, he sure was out of luck. He shouted, that's too raw, I'll fix them with the law. Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake, you make me ache. Tie a rock around your block and please jump in a lake. Kindly do it for liberty's sake. Poor Blocky died one evening, I'm very sad to state. He'd climbed the golden ladder right up to that pearly gate. He said, oh, Mr. Peter, one thing I'd like to tell. I'd love to meet the Astorbilts and John D. Rockefeller. Well, Pete says, is that so? You'll find them down below. Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by make me ache. Tie a rock round your block and please jump in a lake. Kindly do it for liberty's sake. Yes, kindly do it for liberty's sake.
And this is the Heartland Labor Forum calendar for April 30th, 2015. CWA protests AT&T bargaining intransigence. They're not moving. Friday, May 1st, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., 777th Northwest Blue Parkway, Lee's Summit. Fast food workers' first Friday photo exhibit. Friday, May 1st, 6 p.m., 3936 Main Street, Kansas City, Missouri. Jobs with Justice Organizing Committee meeting, Tuesday, May 5th, 6:30 p.m., All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut. 2015 Magic Camp, Mentoring a Girl in Construction for High School Girls, June 1st through the 5th. The Builders Association Training Center, 105 West 12th Street, 12th Avenue, North Kansas City. That's zip is 64116. Sponsored by the National Association of Women in Construction and KC Construction Industry. Call 816-564-3589 or go to kcnawic.org. Midwest School for Women Workers, July 19th through the 23rd, DePaul and Roosevelt Universities in Chicago. For brochure and registration and scholarships, go to http://www.midwestwomenworkers.org. Also, if you're a Coalition of Labor Union woman member, they have a scholarship. Check out the Heartland Labor Forum on www.heartlandlaborforum.org, where you can also listen to today's show.
And you can also find our upcoming shows, as well as our archived shows, and check out the Heartland Labor Forum podcast. So if you miss a show, you'll always have the podcast. Just go to iTunes and look up Heartland Labor Forum. That's it for tonight's show. Tune in next week. The show is going to be called AT&T on a Race to the Bottom and Home Healthcare Workers Fighting for a Union. We're going to be talking to the home healthcare workers about how they're organizing across the state and why various employers like the whole person aren't getting on board. Thanks to tonight's engineer, our substitute engineer, Mike Murphy. And stay tuned for the Thursday night special, which is the White House Correspondents' Dinner in music and prose. You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.